Are you obsessed with Los Angeles? Head over heels in love with the City of Angels? Well, this is the podcast for you. At Life Hacks LA, we hack the best in arts, eats, and activities in Los Angeles. So join us and become an LA hacker. What's going on, LA Hackers? Welcome to episode number 62. Today we are talking about what many people all over the world dream about, and that's moving to LA and making it in the entertainment industry. But do you still need to move to Los Angeles or New York to have a shot in entertainment? That used to be the conventional wisdom, but some people say with how social media has affected the entertainment industry, that might not necessarily be true today. Well, we are interviewing my good friend Richard Jefferson, and he has worked as an entertainment attorney in Los Angeles for almost 20 years now. Richard is going to share with us his thoughts on what it takes for people to have success in the industry today, and if he thinks that includes having to move to Los Angeles. I hope you enjoy the interview, and of course, stay tuned to the end where I'll share my own special LA entertainment industry hack. Thanks, guys, and I'll talk to you again soon. What's going on, LA Hackers? Our guest today is Richard Jefferson from Lawyers Rock. How you doing today, Rich?
I'm good. How you doing, Steph? Stephon?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good, man. So for our audience out there, we've known each other for quite some time, so it's really cool to have you on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's probably been about 20 years, right?
Yeah. Okay, don't date us now. Don't talk about specific dates. Just say it's been a long time.
We're babies.
Oh, yeah. I met you in third grade, right?
Yeah.
I used to cheat off your paper.
There we go.
All right. So, Rich, you are a longtime entertainment attorney here in Los Angeles, and we're going to talk about the state of the entertainment industry when it pertains to Los Angeles. And, you know, do you still need to move to LA to make it in entertainment? Get into all that fun stuff. But before we do that, we always like to learn more about our guests. Not for me, obviously, but for the audience. So can you tell us where you're from originally and how you made your way to Los Angeles?
Yeah, I'm originally from Ohio. I was born and raised in Ohio, different cities in Ohio. Like we moved around a lot, and I lived there and ended up going to Ohio State when I was, after high school, and worked in Ohio for a few years before I just had to find out what the rest of the world offered. So I'm moved out, went to Orlando. I got a job. I was an engineer. So that was my degree in undergrad. And I got a degree, and I got my first job in Orlando, basically just kind of overseeing hospitals and doing the engineering for them. Then I moved up to Charlotte, which was like the headquarters for my company. So I got a taste of North Carolina and kind of the interesting culture they have out there. And then I moved to Houston.
Wow.
In Houston, I got a really good job. It was a great opportunity to move there. And at that time, I started thinking about law school, so I wasn't sure what I was going to do. Houston had a really good law school there, but I really wanted to do entertainment, so I was thinking either New York or LA. And once I weighed all the options, the weather won out, and I came out to LA. And they also had like a 2-year law program here, so it was like an accelerated pace law program. So that brought me to LA, and I've been here ever since. It's been about, like I said, about 20 years.
Well, was that part of your decision as well? Like, so you knew you want to be an entertainment attorney. So you weren't only thinking about where you're going to go to law school, but when you get out of school, having those job opportunities in entertainment, is that why you were just considering New York and LA?
Yeah, definitely. Because I've always been a big believer in immersing yourself in what you're doing. And sure, I could go to a law school in Houston or Texas or, you know, anywhere, Boston. But on that off time, you know, what do you do? How do you network? And back then, you know, this is before social media and, you know, all this, all these other ways that you can network with people. You know, you have to go out and grind. So that's why I came out to LA. I was like, okay, well, I'll go to law school, but I'll also get a job in the entertainment industry. I'll network with people, meet with people, talk with them, build my network. And, you know, that's how it came about.
You know, this is one of the reasons why I love interviewing people I know, because you find out stuff that you never knew. For example, we've known each other so long, and I knew that you were from Ohio, obviously, and I knew that you lived in Florida before you moved to Los Angeles, but I had no idea that you lived in Houston and
Charlotte.
Yeah, I had no idea. So that's cool.
Yeah. It's a progression. Everyone's life is a progression, and you know, you take your different steps. I think Charlotte might have been a misstep. It was not a great place for me at the time, but you know, you live and learn.
Yeah. Okay. So you've been an entertainment attorney in Los Angeles for close to 20 years now, like you mentioned. And I'd like to first ask you about the music industry, because especially early on in your legal career, you were doing a lot of stuff in music. I remember, what was it like for an artist, for someone up and coming in 2000, 2002 versus today, like 2020?
Yeah, in 2000, you know, the industry was changing a lot in 2000. So we were still on the cusp of where artists had to really hustle, you know, to sell physical product. And that's when the industry was really focused on record sales, you know, CD sales. There wasn't a lot of this other stuff that's going on now. It was just basically you're trying to grind. And I think the goal for artists was to get on a major label. That was like almost like the only way they felt that they could make it. So, you know, I saw a lot of people, you know, try to succeed, but they didn't succeed because there are only certain slots for that. But on the same tip, that's kind of when a lot of the indie game was born. And I also ended up working with a lot of the people who were, you know, very entrepreneurial minded, because they saw that maybe they couldn't get a record deal, so they'd go for a distribution deal, and they try to create their own labels. I mean, when I was in law school, I did an internship with Virgin Records, which turned into a position after law school, and I ended up working with, like, you know, really big people like Jay Prince, a Rap-A-Lot, Barry Hankersham, Black Round. You know, those were like major players back then, and they're releasing artists like Aaliyah and Timberland and, you know, the Neptunes. But back then they were just getting started. But I got to kind of see the hustle and how the music industry was being basically how it worked. And it was very, very rigid, but it did focus all on sales.
Yeah, it seemed so much more powerful back then, because I remember you worked in Burbank back in the day, and there was that row mm-hmm. of like music companies, like these huge iconic companies. Do those even exist anymore? Like, or do they, I mean, the offices probably went away, right?
Yeah, no, they've all morphed into, I mean, let's put it this way. I think about 2000 or so, there might've been 5 to 7 major labels, you know, what they would consider major labels. Today there are 3. So everybody kind of consolidated and just changed the way they work, but they're like the actual named labels are still around. They're just kind of subsidiaries of the big 3. Mm. So the Loftus buildings, and you know, they've combined and laid off, and I was even part of a layoff at Virgin. I had to end up laying off people because I was in the legal affairs, and Yeah, it was horrible, because we had wiped out a whole division of people just one day, and just shut down that whole floor. So that was going on all the way up through probably 2008, 2009, you know, when things started to kind of turn around a little bit, and then streaming started to come up. And, you know, what really killed it was Napster. I mean, Napster was like, it just killed the music industry, and they weren't ready for that. You know,
yeah, I mean, so many people were just downloading music for free. I mean, they just gutted them.
Yeah, and also I think when I was like there, people even who were aware of it weren't really afraid of it, because they thought it was like a fad or it was gonna be easy to shut down. But it kind of just was like open up a can of worms. It just grew and grew and grew, and you know, once you looked back, it was like, wow, there's no way to stop this. You know,
this is crazy. And it's like you said, they were kind of, they had a traditional way of doing things. And so they're also slow to react, to put up yeah, their own way. I remember their philosophy back then was just to fight streaming music, like it was going to go away or something.
Yeah. You know,
the internet's out there. They found a way to, because it's all about convenience, right? It's not only that Napster, you're getting it for free, but nowadays you get you have to pay for it, but it's about the convenience. But back then they were just trying to just stop the whole technology altogether from happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the generations changed as well. So, you know, probably 2007, 2008, the younger generation had no idea about buying a CD. You know, they didn't even understand the concept of buying music like that. So you've got just generations who expect music to just be there on demand, and you can't go back to making them buy it. So yeah, that's how everything had to change.
Yeah, unless it's like a nostalgic thing, you know, where they want to go to a record shop, but that's like a, you know, once a couple times a year, you know, you do that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, I mean, they still have vinyl, but it's for DJs and the older DJs, you know.
So let's talk about up and coming artists today versus back then, because one of the interesting things is that I remember a lot of people would ask you, you know, about their music career or whatever, and they're from some small town in the middle of the country, and you and other people said, you know, you're not going to make it in music, or it's highly unlikely unless you move to LA where the action's at, you know, because there's so many talented people out there.
Yeah.
They're not going to choose someone in the middle of the country who hasn't even shown the initiative to come, you know, to Los Angeles where it's all happening. So has that changed? Because in 2020, like you said, you know, we get our music digitally. Now people can make names on themselves, can make names for themselves on YouTube, Instagram, et cetera, get a huge following and then get a deal. So do you feel like you still need to move to LA or New York or one of these cities to make it music?
Yeah, I mean, I think LA and New York are just so unique with entertainment. You're just going to get so far if you're not in one of those cities. You're going to limit yourself because, I mean, the whole way that you kind of build yourself and you know, build your network is probably not the mainstream deal, but it's the networking of the people that you're meeting along the way. And, you know, for instance, like for me, like all the assistants that I met, and I worked some like lower level jobs when I was in law school. And, you know, I was like assistant, and I was like, you know, just doing whatever I could do, promoting anything. But those people that I met along the way, they all kind of rose at the same time. And now I have those connections of like, you know, vice presidents and people who, you know, 20 years ago, they were just low level like me, and now they're all in the industry, because the industry is very more experience based than it is like educational based. I mean, you kind of have to pay your dues. So you know, I bring that point up because, you know, whether you're an attorney or an artist or whatever, you kind of have to come to LA and be prepared and be ready for your opportunities. I mean, it's, you're not going to come here, you're not going to get like a blockbuster deal, you know, living in, you know, somewhere in the middle of the country, and then they expect you to, you know, get your affairs together, move your whole world to LA, get used to LA, kind of learn the city, and then you just get this cushy job to just kind of sit into. I mean, that's not how it works. You got to be here to grind, and when that opportunity comes, you got to be ready to take it quick, because, you know, it's really competitive out here. I mean, I'm sure you know, of any industry is competitive. You got to be ready as soon as somebody says, you know, here's your opportunity. Do you want it? And you got to take it.
Yeah, definitely true. And it definitely helps to be on the ground where you're meeting all the right people, like you said, and making those connections.
Yeah.
Now one thing, you know, you work with social media personalities. I mean, that's blown up in the last, especially 5 years, but it's been going on for the last 10 years. And you were very early on to see the potential of YouTube. I remember you used to talk about YouTube way back before anybody else was talking about it.
Oh yeah.
So what are your thoughts on social media and making it in the entertainment industry? I mean, is it pretty much, you know, like they're all a business, these music companies and even entertainment companies. So they want to take a chance on someone who's already proven themselves in a sense where they've got this huge following. Do you still see that, or is it, or can you still like come out of nowhere and make yourself a star?
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, yeah, first of all, I was the first big social media star, because I put out my first video in 2006 and nobody was doing that. And I just did it for a kind of a, just experiment. And I got like 50,000 views, like within like, you know, a couple months, which was really big back then. So I think that's what showed me the power of it. I mean, I would go around LA and people would recognize me. You know, I'd be like, they'd be like, hey, you're that guy from YouTube, you know, because there weren't, it wasn't really saturated like that. So I think that prepared me for seeing how powerful it could be. And when I started meeting people and seeing more other people, you know, get success from social media, I saw how it was leveraged. And not only, I mean, at first it was leveraged more for like products, you know, like product placement and promotions, but then it seeped into like television where you know, they'll be doing maybe an indie production would be doing a low budget production, but they wanted to get the most out of marketing. So they would hire, you know, people with big social media followings because it'd be easy to market to them. And I mean, I think that's just kind of been the model actually in the last, I'd say 10 years where I have clients who have gone into auditions and the first thing they ask them is how many followers you have, you know, what's your platforms, you know? So that's kind of like the criteria even to audition.
Yeah, because it's like free marketing too, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's free marketing. It's, I mean, there are endless ways you can do it. You can cross market. You're going to be on multiple platforms. So that's definitely the way the industry is working now and it's way it's working the last probably 10 years. But more for the indie market. I mean, you've got to be a major label or a major studio to actually develop an artist or an actor and get their following. But that's expensive. That's really expensive. So a lot of the indies, like indie movies and indie television, you know, like Netflix shows, digital, they all look for social media talent to kind of build their brands.
That's interesting. Another area that you have a lot of experience in and I wanted to ask you about is reality TV. I mean, reality TV is one of the most popular types of programming, but I was wondering what your thoughts on the future of it is because, you know, when the Kardashians started, you pretty much had to be on a network, right?
Right.
And we're talking about how they're growing the social media following, but another huge trend is that you can create your own reality TV show, basically just using Instagram. I mean, they got Instagram Stories, Instagram Live. The editing tools they have out now are amazing. People are getting better at using them. You don't need to go out and buy this expensive camera equipment, pay professionals. So do you think reality TV will eventually go where people are just self-producing themselves and you don't necessarily need a network?
Well, I think the network's always going to be there because that's kind of like the holy grail, you know, and most creatives are looking for that. They're looking to be on mainstream broadcast television and cable. I think like reality shows are more like incubators and they, you're right. They're very cheap to make and you can get on a platform easily. And you know, the hustle, you can hustle and be your own channel and network. It's just a lot of work. And it's, I don't think a lot of creatives are wanting to do that work, you know, to maintain it. I mean, there are tons of people who have YouTube channels and they use ITV and TikTok and even like you know, other platforms that kind of help them catapult into a network deal. But now they've got these kind of middle ground platforms like Quibi. You know, they're like 10-minute shows. So that's kind of like a stepstone from a YouTube to a Quibi. And then I think the ultimate goal is always going to be the network.
So yeah, that's true. And actually it works the other way as well, because I've watched some reality TV shows on, you know, on television and saw someone interesting and then started following on their social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get these huge audiences on their own personal social media from being on TV. And that's going to be, you know, money for income for them for a really long time from their social media.
Yeah. And I think that's the hardest part of the deal is usually carving out what they like to do that on their social media, because the networks like to kind of like land grab every right when they sign an artist. But if they've built up this brand, you know, and like I said, creatives, they want to create, they don't want to do the business. They don't want to do the legal. They you know, they don't want to do the high level production. They just want to have an audience and follow and, you know, come up with creative ideas. So they want to continue to do that. But their ultimate goal is probably to be on a network. And then the network takes all that business and legal stuff that they do and the talent just shows up, but then off camera, they still want to do their social media.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see the way it's going, how social media is just integrating with it, with these old school platforms like television, network TV, et cetera.
Yeah, and it's, what's interesting also is you know, now that COVID has happened, now we've got all this live streaming going on. So that's like a whole nother, it's always been there, but you know, even back when Periscope was big, and we've always had the streaming platform, the technology, but we've never had the interest of it. So now with the COVID-19 knocking everybody, keeping everybody at home, the interest has been there. And like, you know, the Verses, you know, that big series with Swiss Beats, and that's really, I think that pulls in between 700,000 and a million views.
Wow.
You know, so, you know, the next level is to kind of monetize that. I mean, the big push.
It's interesting what you're saying, because like something could be available, but you need some type of push. Because I remember when video chat first came out, I was like, oh my God, no one's ever going to just talk audio anymore. This is amazing. And nobody ever uses video chat. But now that the pandemic happened, you're on Zoom meetings, you're doing video chat all the time. But it took, I mean, it's been around forever, but it took something to happen for people to actually do it.
Yeah, plus the ease of it. I mean, Zoom makes everything so easy. I mean, before you had WebEx and all those other ones, you got to download software, and you know, it gets a little clunky to do every day. But Zoom makes it like really seamless, so that's why it's kind of like become the mainstream. But yeah, it's you just got to be pushed. Basically, technology is there now.
Yeah, and they definitely make it easy. Like my main platform is Instagram, so they've got Instagram Stories. Mm-hmm. They've got Instagram Reels now. I don't really do Instagram Live, but I mean the tools are there. It doesn't take. I'm not very good at like creating videos or anything, but they make it so easy that you know you spend an hour and you're gonna figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. But, and that's the problem. That's a problem right now. There's so many of those tools. There's no go-to like live stream tool like that for like Zoom is for video conferencing. You know, I've got all these clients coming to me with this, you know, these ideas of the software, but the software is easy to make. It's all about branding and who, you know, where are you going to go see your concert? It's gotta be like a Live Nation or somebody that comes out with the go-to concert, you know, live streamer and live stream software.
Yeah, it's not about the idea. It's about the execution, right?
Yeah. Yep.
All right, cool. That's some great information on the entertainment industry nowadays in Los Angeles. I wanted to jump back into the city itself, LA, because like you mentioned, you've lived here a long time and you've actually lived in a lot of different places. So I'm really curious to ask you about this, because I think in LA, depending on where you live, it can be a completely different experience. So can you share with us some of the areas that you've lived in and some of your personal pros and cons with those areas?
Yep, sure can. Let's see, I moved here and I landed in Koreatown.
Wow.
Because that was right by the law school, you know, and that was my whole reason. When I moved here, I hadn't seen LA I had visited LA, but I hadn't seen the law school or anything. So I just moved in with a moving truck and I just wanted to be close to Southwestern. So I moved to Koreatown. Back then it wasn't the best. It was a little seedy back then, you know, so I wasn't too happy, but you know, Koreatown's really nice now. I mean, I was there before the train, before they had the Metro. So that's why.
Was there still a ton of good restaurants over there way back then and bars?
Yeah, a few. I mean, it was low key, like you had to find them, but it was, you know, it wasn't a great place to be at night. It was a little bit, it's close to MacArthur Park, you know, that wasn't a very good park back then. So it wasn't nice, but Koreatown now is amazing. But I wish I would have gone to law school now. Cause I mean, they've got high rises out there and new buildings and great food. Like you said, great food. They always have great food in Koreatown.
And they got some really trendy bars now. There's still a couple neighborhoods that are sketchy, but over the last 10 years, man, they've really made that area nice.
Yeah, it's not bad. So then in the middle of law school, I moved to Los Feliz. That was, you know, that was amazing. I loved that place. I used to go to Griffith Park like every day and, you know, run up the mountains. And I mean, I was in shape back then. So I would run, you know, all those paths and go run to the Hollywood sign. And you know, that great food again, everything. I mean, it was just, I really missed that as a single person. It was great. And I don't think I could live there.
Yeah, that's an amazing area, but it's so congested now. I mean, I don't know how it was back then, but
parking was horrible. Yeah, yeah. That was the con, definitely.
And that traffic when you're trying to get through from Burbank to like Griffith Park is on your right, that street. Oh my God, that little area could take you 40 minutes just to get through that.
Yeah, you got to learn the back roads. Definitely, Rowena I think is like one of the main roads I used to take to kind of get around a lot of that traffic, but that was cool. Then I moved to North Hollywood, moved there into it. That wasn't a great time for North Hollywood. Now we're talking about kind of like the mid 2005, 2004. So they hadn't built it up yet, but now again, it's really nice. They've redone that area. I remember one time when I was in North Hollywood and I used to live behind, I guess it was a weed house. And I was walking out and then, you know, Flavor Flav is sitting there, you know, doing whatever. And I was just like, wow, this is kind of ghetto fabulous.
Well, I remember you used to go to Roscoe's back in the day, right? Did you see celebrities back then at Roscoe's?
Oh, yeah. That was a hangout.
Yeah.
So they're all through the 2000s, you know, with John.
Was that the Hollywood one or Sunset?
Yeah, the Hollywood one. That was before they built up Hollywood. They had everything. And I remember seeing Aaliyah there. I'd see all kinds of people. And we had the doorman who liked us, so he let us in there, and he treated us like we're celebrities.
That's pretty funny. There's a doorman at Roscoe's. Like, now I think you could randomly see a celebrity at Roscoe's, but I don't think I don't think it's like it was back then where you're almost guaranteed.
No, that was a spot back then. We did that.
We're out after NoHo.
NoHo, then I moved to Pasadena.
Man, you just keep going farther and farther north.
Yeah. I mean, I moved out there because when we got married, you know, we just wanted more of a family friendly area, and that definitely is. Pasadena is like the perfect mix between having a nightlife and then also having a family life.
Because I agree,
the old town is perfect at night.
And Pasadena is one of those cities that it's overshadowed, obviously, because it's not far from Los Angeles, but it totally stands on its own. I mean, there's nothing you can't find in Pasadena.
Yeah. Pasadena is amazing. I mean, and it's just like its own city. It's got its good areas, its bad areas, you know, pretty good racial mix actually out there, but it's got its problems and it's good stuff. I mean, it's definitely like a city on an island out there, but it's not too far from LA. So you can still work in LA and get there. So from there, I moved to Atwater Village, which is right south of Glendale. Mm-hmm. And that was like a great like little area, great food again, and that was kind of like on the other side of Griffith Park, so I was able to kind of like go there and work out and take the kids to like the trains that they have in Griffith Park were really cool, so that was cool, but the school options weren't great, so then we moved into Valencia, and you know, that's what we call the ticky-tacky part of LA, because it's, you know, if anyone ever watched Weeds, it's just like those cookie cutter houses are, they're all the same.
Yeah,
but you know, it's a great place to raise kids. It's like has everything, more than you need to raise a kid out here. A million baseball leagues and a million, you know, whatever you want.
It's very family centric out there, right?
Yeah, very family. I mean, that's really the reason people move out here. I came out here probably when I was in about 2000, 2002, and I vowed that I would never move out here because I would never be that guy who had a family and needed to move away. But here I am. So.
But you know, it's interesting, Rich, when you went down the list, I was thinking in my mind, okay, Koreatown, super single. NoHo, could be single, could have a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Pasadena, get married.
Yeah,
Valencia, you're definitely married with kids. So you kind of like did the LA progression there.
I sure did. There are a lot of people out here too like that. So that's kind of cool when you run into somebody who gets it You know, there are a lot of people who don't, who just lived out here and they just live this life. But if somebody's come from LA, then they kind of get it. And they're like, yeah, it makes sense. You know.
Yeah. And another reason why you wouldn't live in Valencia if you're single is because no one's going to travel that far to meet you.
Exactly.
If you're in Koreatown, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I'll be down there in a few minutes.
Yeah. Even Pasadena, you know, that's kind of, people come out to Pasadena. But yeah, no one's coming out here. No one's coming out to Valencia. Ever.
That's like a serious relationship if you're going all the way out to Valencia. It's nice out there. I remember going out there a really long time ago, and you know, obviously it was cheaper back then, and thinking, mm-hmm. wow, you can actually afford a house out here.
Yeah,
but I think it's changed since then. This is like 10-15 years ago.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really nice, but you know, it's got its seedy areas too, though. I mean, it's not perfect. You still
really
you'd be surprised. It's not, you know, you go up a little further north to like, you know, Palmdale or Lancaster. I mean, it's kind of ghetto up there.
Yeah. I guess every area has it. It's just that when I think of Valencia and Santa Clarita, I just think all I picture is suburbs, you know?
Yeah. 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 Well, we stay there.
How are you dealing with the heat up there? Because isn't it a lot hotter?
Yeah. Lately it's been really hot. It's been like 113, 114, so.
But it's always over 100 in the summertime, right?
Yeah, it's always around 100. So that's a con, definitely, of this area.
That's the interesting thing about living in Los Angeles. Like, we live in the South Bay, and it doesn't really get over 80 degrees. Like, every once in a while, it'll hit 90. But look at the difference. I mean, that's like desert heat versus coastal, and it's really not that far, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting how diverse the weather is here.
Oh, that's another reason why I moved to LA. I was like, there's so much to do, and you can go, you know, like you said, 20 minutes and you can find a totally different environment. So you can't really do that in New York. It's a little bit congested. So
yeah, it kind of stays the same. But okay, let's get into that, because with your massive experience that you just went over of like living in all these different LA areas, I'm very excited to your answer to this question. And that is, can you describe to us your perfect day in LA from getting up to going to bed? Where would you go and what would you do to make it your dream day in Los Angeles?
Okay. Can I take driving out of the equation?
You can take driving out of the equation. In fact, I recommend it. That's my greatest hack. Don't drive.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause driving, you know, that changes everything.
So the area you pick is going to be very important here.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll just pick my favorites pretty much. I mean, like I said, I've lived around a lot of places, so probably get up early and I would go, probably my favorite breakfast spot in LA is Jumpin' Java in Studio City. So I would definitely, you know, go there, go for breakfast. I like the golf. So I used to love golfing at Brookside in Pasadena. So like I said, it's a little drive, but if we don't have driving going on, then I would hop over to Pasadena, do a round of golf. I used to run around the Rose Bowl a lot. And so that was that's a great, just kind of, we actually did a mud run.
Yeah. So. I still feeling the pain of quads from the gods. They make you run up and down the Rose Bowl stairs. And at the very beginning of your, what was it? Was that the Tough Man? What was that?
Mud runner?
Yeah. Mudder? Something like that. Yeah, yeah. I remember the guy from American Gladiators was there, Nitro.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they burn you out in the very beginning because they have mm-hmm. you on the Rose Bowl stairs in the first 5 minutes of the race.
Yeah, they sure do. I mean, yeah, that was awesome. But I missed that. Miss being
yeah, I love Pasadena.
Yeah. Other places, I'd probably go to lunch in the Malibu and go out the Moon Shadows. I love that place. Mm. Just right there on the water. I used to go to happy hours out there all the time. So that's cool. I would go probably ride my bike down the beach, maybe down to like Santa Monica, because I love the ocean. I'm not so much a sand person. I don't like to lay around on sand as much.
You like the views, right?
I like the views and just the air, you know, and listening to the waves. That's kind of me, my thing. I used to love Santa Monica Pier. I think it's closed still, but I would probably go there. And for dinner, I'd jump back over and go downtown to Shaquille's. That's one of my favorite spots downtown.
Oh, it's Staples, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, right, that's a good Staples. Spot.
Yep. And then if I could get tickets, I'd go to a Lakers game or maybe Clippers. I mean, I don't know. Or Lakers Clippers. I mean, nowadays, you don't know. They might be in the finals.
Yeah, there you go. See the Lakers and the Clippers and get them both.
That'd be awesome. And I'll probably do a nightcap at a comedy place, because that was my big thing too. I would go to the Comedy Store. I'd pick up clients at the Improv. You know, I'd go with your brother John to all these places late at night when there's nothing to do. So I'd love to go to like the back room at the Comedy Store. That's where like all the comics are working out their material. So that was, you know, you could just get a drink and kind of just sit back and heckle them or you know, just see what worked, you know, see who's the next thing.
Oh, so you have like more access to a famous person because they're practicing their stuff and there's not a big audience there, right?
Yeah, like famous people, you know, just aspiring people. You just never know. I mean, people just go up the stage.
Yeah, I remember one time I went and saw, I went to a comedy club, and it was some weird thing like that where we just randomly went, but it was like late at night. And then Joe Rogan was there, you know, I think he was just testing material. And yeah, you could just walk right up to him because there wasn't a huge crowd or anything. And he wasn't like the headliner or anything like that.
Yeah. 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 That's where they work things out. So that's the spot. And then that used to be across street from the House of Blues. That used to be a nice place to go. But yeah, I think that's it. Then I go to bed.
That sounds like an incredible day, man. You hit a lot of cool LA spots in that one. So, Rich, I wanted to ask you about, because, you know, knowing you for as long as I have and all your work in the entertainment industry, you told me some nightmare stories about people who are coming up in music or acting or reality TV. And, you know, they didn't know how to protect themselves. So I wanted to ask you about the agreement packages that you have to kind of help people who are just starting out in the entertainment industry. And if you could share with us a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have the perfect example. Because, I mean, it happens like every few days. You know, I get so many people contacting me saying, you know, I tried to do this with this person. You know, it could be a gamer. It could be a TV show. It could be a music project. I mean, I just had this call from a young singer. And her dad was asking me about the agreements because he saw them, but he didn't buy them. And he was saying, well, you know, I've got this deal that I had this verbal agreement with this guy to create a show. You know, we developed it. We got talent. And then the guy ended up taking it and copyrighted it himself. And the guy was like, well, how, you know, do I own part of the copyright? And basically, the answer is, if you don't have something in writing, no. I mean, you don't own the entire copyright, because if he would have had that simple little agreement, a work for hire sign, and he ended up paying the person too. So he's just thinking in his mind. And a lot of people think this way. They're like, if I pay for it, then I own it. But that's not how the law works. And that's probably the main thing that I run into. It's like people don't understand. You've got the copyright law says you need something in writing that says you own it. For you to own it, and regardless of paying or not, if you don't, then whoever contributes to a project owns it. So he also had a song that they had written, and he paid the producer and paid a co-writer. They ended up writing it, and when it came out so good, the producer and the co-writer said, "No, we want to keep it." And I mean, they didn't give the money back, which is a whole nother issue. That's a whole nother contract issue, but. My point is that there are examples like this every day where people just kind of like go on a whim and just kind of come together and try to create things and don't take the business seriously. So that's why I came up with this package, because a lot of people I understand can't afford attorneys. I mean, I get it. I mean, when I was younger and when I was a young attorney, I probably couldn't afford an attorney.
Yeah.
But there's that middle ground though. There's a middle ground of whether, you know, you're going to protect yourself or you're going to hire an attorney or are you going to do nothing? And doing nothing is going to just cause problems. So that's why I put together this nice little package that pretty much gives you bare bones protection, but at least you're protected. And I think that's it's been a really good, I've gotten a lot of good feedback on it from people who have purchased it.
Yeah, it's really cool that you're doing that. Like I said, I've heard some of the horror stories. So for people who are interested, I'll have the links in the show notes, but if you just go to lawyersrock.com, you'll see that he has a place for agreements. They're very, very affordable, and it's like an insurance policy. So you definitely want to think about getting it if you're involved in the entertainment industry. He's got some for music, social media, reality TV, and even independent film. So definitely want to cover your butt with that. But Rich, is there anything else that you want to talk about Los Angeles in general or the entertainment industry in LA that I haven't asked you or we haven't already talked about?
Yeah, I can just kind of tie this everything up in a bow and talk about the LA and the experience of moving like we talked about earlier. You know, I would tell people who are listening, you know, if you're going to be in entertainment, you really do want to kind of compete against the top of the top, you know, the cream of the crop. So you're not going to find that if you don't come to LA. I mean, that's the reason why I moved to LA. I wanted to be in the thick of it with the best attorneys so I can learn, you know, the best practices. I talk to artists all the time who want to, you know, be in the music industry. So they want to do the LA circuit so they can get, you know, cheers or boos. You know, they want to know if they're good. You know, actors come here because they want to be in front of like seasoned casting directors. I mean, these are all things that if you're going to want to be in the entertainment industry, you got to know if you belong or not. So I think it's definitely something that people should think about if when they're deciding whether to move or stay where they are and try to build their career. So,
yeah, that's a great point, Rich. And also, I think it motivates you to work harder and do more as well when you're around people like that. So, exactly. You know, I have this podcast. I wouldn't have had it if I would have stayed in Seattle, you know, well, obviously because it's about LA, but to do something like that, you know,
yeah,
I was motivated by seeing other people around me in Los Angeles. I'm like, okay, this person's hustling doing this. This person's hustling doing that.
Right.
You know, why can't I, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It pushes your limits. I mean, you helped me push my limits with the Lawyers Rock. I mean, that was like, that's not something I planned on starting out in, but you really helped me develop that. And, you know, so it's, yeah, you always just need to have an open mind and be around creative people and be around the best of the best so you can better yourself.
Very well said, my friend. And I'll end it right there. So I mentioned where they can get the musical agreements package, but in general, if people want to follow you and find out more about you, where's the best place they can go?
It's probably best just that my IG is at Lawyers Rock. That's probably the easiest way to contact me, or go to lawyersrock.com and there's a contact page on there. That's probably the easiest way to get to me.
All right, cool. And like I said, we'll add it all to the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on, my friend.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Stefan again. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with my good friend, Richard Jefferson from lawyersrock.com, as he helped us hack the entertainment industry in Los Angeles here in 2020. Okay, if you want to find out more about Richard or see what he has to offer, you can find him at lawyersrock.com or on Instagram at lawyersrock. All right, so on to my special hack about the entertainment industry, and it has to do with what Richard and I talked about, because again, I've known him for a long time, and I know that he, you know, he's a successful attorney, and he charges a lot of money for his services, like entertainment attorneys do. But years ago, he released these agreements, and I helped them put those online. But it was a way to help people out there that couldn't afford an entertainment attorney, because like we talked about it in our conversation that you just listened to, he's told me some nightmare stories about people who just got completely screwed because they were trying to make it in entertainment and then they didn't have proper contracts in place, you know, whether that be music or reality TV productions or documentary films or what have you. And then later on, they ended up getting screwed, you know, it's the quickest way to put it. So anyway, he's released these agreements and they're already very inexpensive. They're, you know, most of them are $100 a piece, but it's kind of like just an insurance policy. If you're involved in the entertainment industry or you know anyone who's involved in the entertainment industry. So he's got music packages for, you know, producers, labels, and artists. He's got reality television production agreements. He's got agreements for documentary filmmakers. And I actually talked him into creating one for social media influencers because, you know, I do a lot of stuff on social media and I work with brands and stuff, and I wanted a contract in place. So he actually created a package for that as well. So if you're like me and you're involved in social media, you want to check it out. But anyway, let's get to my hack. So the agreements are already inexpensive, and I recommend that if you know anyone involved in any of these industries, music, reality TV, social media, or documentary films, you go check them out. But I talked to Rich, and since we're friends, I got him to reduce it even further. So if you're listening to this and you need to purchase these agreements, you can enter the promo code LifeHacksLA. So when you go to the checkout, just click on promo, type in LifeHacksLA. It'll give you an extra 20% off of what's already like a crazy inexpensive price for legal agreements from a, you know, 20-year entertainment attorney. All right, guys, so that's my hack for you this week. And you, like I said, you can find those at lawyersrock.com. Just go to agreement packages, you'll see it, and type in LifeHacksLA at the checkout where the promo code goes. All right, that's all I got for you this week, and I will talk to you again soon. Later.